You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told lawmakers last week that the White House will sell $8 billion in weapons to countries including Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. We'll talk about the deal, the White House's decision to sidestep Congress, and how it could impact U.S.-Middle East relations. First, President Trump announced last week that he'll be rolling out a second round of aid payments for farmers. The move comes as the trade war with China continues and as farmers and other industries feel the squeeze from retaliatory tariffs. Here's the president hinting at the aid package 2 weeks ago at the White House.
China will be retaliating probably to a certain extent against our farmers. We're going to take the highest year, the biggest purchase that China has ever made with our farmers, which is about $15 billion, and do something reciprocal to our farmers so our farmers can do well. They'll be planting, they'll be able to sell for less, and they'll make the same kind of money until such time as it's all straightened out.
Steve Deller is a professor with UW-Madison's Agricultural and Applied Economics Program. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Good afternoon.
Well, as you're seeing it, I think some of the details are still to be worked out, but what's in this new second round of aid for farmers?
It's basically the same type of a program. Again, a lot of the details have not been worked out. There are some differences between the last one and this one. For example, the last one, it was based on production. How many bushels did you produce? How much milk did you produce? This time it's going to be based on acreage, things like that. So there's lots of little details in there that are a little bit different, but it's basically the same type of policy.
And one of the concerns was that if it's based on, say, current year's acreage or production, it might be encouraging farmers to plant crops that would fit into the subsidy program, kind of a weird incentive.
That was last year. This year, they're actually trying to change that. And they're basically saying that it will be based on the actual planting ratios that are in place at the time. The problem, though, and this is one of the details that has not been worked out, is that it is only going to count land that is in production right now. Now, the problem that we've got is that we've had a very wet spring. And there is a number of counties where the farmers have just simply not been able to get into the fields. Wisconsin, for example, the numbers just came out about an hour ago. So this is the most current numbers. Right now for corn planting, for example, about 82% of all the corn that's going to be planted has been planted historically. We're at 46% right now. Other states like Illinois and Indiana, they're at terribly low numbers. Now, the problem that that creates is that if you don't have your crops in the field by the time these policies are decided, you may be left out.
Now, even if all goes well, is this enough of a difference maker for farmers who are hurt by the impacts of trade?
No. I was talking to a farmer this afternoon, and what she was describing was essentially the farm economy is hemorrhaging money, and we need it. We need a tourniquet, and this is a Band-Aid. For example, last year, corn was basically a penny on a bushel, which is basically a rounding error. For milk, it was 12 cents a hundredweight. And when milk prices are around $16 a hundredweight, 12 cents is nothing. It will be a short-term aid to some farmers. But it's a Band-Aid on a hemorrhaging wound.
Let's talk about a double whammy here. For some commodities, I guess I'm thinking milk in particular, prices were already low, period. And there's this trade war that's hitting them again.
One of the things that makes this particular period in farming different than historically is that I was just looking at some farm data going back to 1969. And historically, you'll see kind of this up and down pattern, 1 year down, the next year up, maybe 2 years down, 2 years up. But there's this kind of cyclical pattern that farmers are very used to. So they're kind of used to being able to ride these things out. This is the first time since the farm crisis of the early 1980s that we're going into year five of down prices. It's that long-term downward trend that many farmers are simply they're not able to cash flow it anymore.
1 year, I could say, is a bad year. Maybe I can make it through to next year. Five years,
I can't do that. And that's where so many farmers are hurling. So this payment that's coming from the trade component of the support programs that are out there, it's not enough to reverse that.
Talking to Steve Deller from UW-Madison's Agricultural and Applied Economics Program about the Trump administration plan to pay $16 billion out to farmers impacted by a trade war, mainly with China. Steve, as a policy, farming or otherwise, do we see this kind of, I guess, trade adjustment payment made? Is this something we've done before?
Only in dire emergencies. I mean, you would have to go back to the farm crisis of the early 80s to see something like this. Part of what makes this a little bit different is that this it's almost like icing on the cake of a bad situation. Is what the trade policy is doing. So if you're implementing policies that are impacting the farmers in a negative way, there's kind of this political need to kind of compensate them for those poor policy decisions. Now, we could get into a discussion about whether or not the current conditions between China and the U.S. are appropriate or not, but the farmers are getting caught up in that fight.
Right. The goal, as the Trump administration states it, is, okay, yes, times are going to be tough in the short run, but we're going to come out with a better deal once we get through this and negotiate a more fair deal. They say everybody, farmers and everybody, is going to be better off.
A fair deal for who? What essentially has started this is the logical argument that China doesn't really respect international patent and copyright laws. China is known for essentially stealing intellectual property rights and patents and copyrights and things like that. And they've been doing it for years and years and years. And that's really what has started a lot of this. If we're going to stop them from doing this, we've got to get tough on them. And that's what got us into this. Now, we can argue whether that's a good idea or not a good idea, but what's happened is that farmers have got caught up in that political fight.
Now, I've talked to some people who were supporters of trade deals, NAFTA, World Trade Organization deals, other international trade negotiations, who said those were good things, but we should have done a part two. We should have had some kind of support program for people whose jobs were disrupted. The factories that shut down after NAFTA, people like that. Philosophically, do you see a role for the government in helping people adjust to the impacts of international trade, whether that's more free trade or tariff wars like we have now?
I think you're right. I mean, there is a transition. When you have a major policy change, there will be transition. There will be winners and losers. With the idea behind free trade is that 99 out of 100 economists will argue that in the long term, free trade, there are more winners than there are losers. But what do you do with those losers in the short term? And this is where I think that there could be policies put into place to kind of help transition that. Most of the time, it's worker related, so it's providing training opportunities, retraining opportunities, programs like that that we've been trying to do. There's question about whether that will work or not. So you could make an argument that you know, we're having this fundamental discussion with China, and farmers are getting caught up in the middle of it. Should we help farmers in that transition period? You could make a logical argument for that. The problem, though, is that the timing of it is such that this really isn't going to help most farmers.
We're talking to Steve Deller from the Agricultural and Applied Economics Program at UW-Madison about $16 billion in aid President Trump says is coming to farmers who have been hurt by the trade war with China. We'll go to your calls now. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks so much. China seems to have benefited quite a bit from unfair trade practices, including the intellectual property theft of the United States, and have leapfrogged tons of countries to become the second most powerful economy in the world. If they are going to continue to have the unfair practices and actually illegal practices that they've been using for the last couple of decades, don't at some point we have to stop and not allow this anymore? And yes, it's going to hurt in the short run, but don't we have to stop sometime? Thanks so much.
Charlie, thanks for the call. Steve, your thoughts?
I think you're right. there is unfair trade on that regard, and it's been the pattern for a number of years. The problem, though, is I don't think the U.S. can convince China to change its practices on its own. This would have to take a number of trading partners of China's trading partners to come together and essentially as a unified front come to China and say either you change your ways or you know, we're going to start taking this much more seriously. So I think you're right, but I think that the way that the president is addressing it is probably not the most strategic way.
Wasn't that one of the hopes for the Trans-Pacific Partnership that ended up being a target for President Trump and for Senator Bernie Sanders on the campaign trail? The idea that, okay, we get together all these countries and not China, and we have more leverage over them?
That's exactly right. Essentially, that trade policy, the TPP, essentially established the trading rules amongst many of the growing Southeast Asian countries or the East Asian countries. And when we decided that we weren't going to participate in that anymore, we essentially kind of set ourselves up for failure. It's better to have a seat at the table and try to influence those discussions than to simply get up and walk away.
Charlie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Mike in Shorewood. Mike, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I heard a few weeks ago a representative from the African American Farmers Association, and he was talking about the first group of subsidies last year that they hadn't seen one penny of that money. And I guess my question to your commentator is, when does the money get dispersed? Why is this thought of as a better solution when I'm assuming it's just more bureaucracy, more red tape for farmers, something they don't want to deal with? And if the first round of subsidies hasn't been delivered, you know, when can we expect this next $16 billion to be handed out to farmers?
Mike, thanks for the call. I don't know about the timeline for the first one, Steve. I know this one's supposed to be in, I think, three installments.
It's three installments, and the first one is supposed to be around July, and then the second around October, November, and then the third one in January. The first one is pretty much guaranteed. If there is an agreement, a trade agreement with China, the second and third ones won't be paid. Not all farmers are eligible for this. This is supposed to be for farmers that have been affected by the trade disputes. And last year, the ones that was kind of at the forefront of the trade dispute was soybeans. Most of the money went to soybeans. For example, dairy's been impacted a little bit by the trade fight. Dairy's going to get a fairly small subsidy. So the African American farmers, it depends on what their commodity is. What are they making? What are they growing? Are they into a commodity market that's being affected by this trade policy? If they are, then they should be eligible for these payments. If they're not, then this program is not for them.
Mike, thanks for that call. Yeah, soy has been the big story. I think people are talking some about pork. Are there any other products, especially of interest to Wisconsin, that might be in the running for this assistance?
It's primarily corn and soybeans is the big one. In Wisconsin, though, a lot of the corn and soybeans goes into animal feed. So it's the big one is dairy, but there's some very small specialty crops, like, say, ginseng or cranberries. I don't know how much cranberries is exported to China. I don't think the last data I looked at, it doesn't get that fine. I know that the ginseng that's produced, a lot of that does go to the Asian market, but I don't think it is part of the program because it's such a small piece of the overall puzzle.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Steve Deller, professor with UW-Madison's Agricultural and Applied Economics Program. Steve, more generally, how dependent is Wisconsin agriculture on exports?
It is, tremendously, but our primary trading is Mexico and Canada. We do see a growing amount of our exports going to China, but it is... it's still a smaller share than Mexico and Canada. There are two big trading partners in terms of dairy. That's why when there was the renegotiation of NAFTA, that's where Wisconsin was more affected by that. The dairy industry was more affected by that negotiation than the dispute with China.
Let's bring on another caller now. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have just a couple comments. My first comment is, I'm not sure how the tariffs are going to work when the person imposing the tariffs doesn't even understand how the tariffs work. And my second comment is, we talk about unfair trade practices. We talk about China taking our jobs. Well, it was the tax cuts during the Bush administration that took 5 million manufacturing jobs that the money given to those corporations built brand new factories in China and in Asia and Indonesia.
Mike, thanks for the call. So on that first point, he's referring to President Trump has talked about China paying the tariffs. A lot of people point out that China doesn't pay them, importers pay them, and consumers in many cases have those costs passed along to them.
That's exactly right. The Chinese are not going to pay for the tariffs. The only way they pay for the tariffs is the price of their exports go up, so the demand for their exports go down a little bit. The person who ends up paying it is the consumer. Now, the question is whether or not the, I don't want to say wholesalers, but the input, the firms that are buying things from China in their production processes, are they able to pass those costs on to the consumers? And that's going to vary from industry to industry. But in the end, the consumer ends up paying for these tariffs.
So how do you see this if we don't end up with a deal, if these tariffs stay in place? How do you see that affecting farmers in Wisconsin and around the country in the next couple of years?
Well, what happens to a large extent is that China is going to start going to some of our competitors to buy the products that they need, particularly with soybeans, for example. It's Brazil is a major producer. And over time, our competitors are going to be able to increase their production to such an extent that they will essentially be able to, they'll be able to sidestep these tariffs. And it will leave the U.S. farmers kind of out in the cold.
Now, I've seen some people say, Steve, that part of the problem with dairy now in particular is that we have overproduction. We have too much milk in Wisconsin, in the United States, on the world market. And if that's the case, prices are never going to go up to this supporting level. What do you think of that?
That's essentially true. One of the ways is that we are producing too much milk. And the argument that we can grow the demand for milk in the U.S. is fairly limited. We can grow the demand for cheese and things like that, but the real potential is foreign exports, is where the growth potential is. We can't grow out of the surplus milk problem by expanding foreign exports. We're simply producing too much. And that's part of the reasons why we're in this kind of fifth year of stress, is because the markets have not responded adequately to kind of rectify that problem. For example, in Wisconsin right now, some of the cheese processing plants are importing milk from Michigan. Because it's just Michigan is producing way more milk than they can process, and it is they're essentially trying to, rather than pouring the milk down the drain where they lose all their money, is they're shipping it over to Wisconsin and charging a slightly less price, and that essentially has a ripple effect.
So what do you see as the best way out of this battle with China in particular over tariffs?
I think the only way that we're going to see a long-term solution to this is if the U.S. trading partners kind of come together and act as a block and go to China as a block and say that, you need to better respect our patents, our copyrights, our intellectual property rights. You need to better enforce your own laws. In China, it is technically illegal to steal somebody's patent idea. The problem is that the Chinese courts don't enforce those laws. Until we can get that fundamental problem changed, this is something that is going to continue to put China at a comparative advantage over us. But the U.S. doing this alone isn't going to work. It's going to take our trading partners working together to put pressure on China to change that.
But President Trump's trade philosophy seems to be pretty consistently bilateral. The U.S. negotiates with country X, the U.S. doesn't negotiate with a group of countries.
And that's unfortunate, because I think the only way we're going to get the leverage to convince China to play by the rules is if we approach them as a bloc. And President Trump prefers not to do that. So I think that this could be a very long, dragged out trade war, and the farmers are getting caught in the middle.
We'll leave it there. Steve, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
That's Steve Deller, professor in the Agricultural and Applied Economics Program at UW-Madison. He's with us today to talk about $16 billion in aid President Trump says will be coming to farmers as the U.S.-China trade war continues. Coming up, we'll talk about an $8 billion arms deal with Middle Eastern countries, including Saudi Arabia, that the White House finalized without congressional approval. We'll look at the details of that, and you can join in with your thoughts. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.